Good afternoon, everybody. Before I gabble us into our official hearing on this matter, I just want to go through a few housekeeping details. How many of you have been to the City Council chamber before? Raise your hand. Okay. Some of you young people, this is the first time. Well, welcome. Where are you from? Oh, I hear the kids that go to that school, the smartest kids in the city. Is that right? Because you study the hardest. Yeah. And you do everything your teachers tell you to do. Yeah. So a couple of rules of the room. There is no clapping. There is no hooting. There is no hollering. There is no noise. This is intended to allow all points of view to be expressed without any fear of any sort of response. My job is to try to keep a level playing field. For this particular hearing, you need to disclose at the initial point that you sit down, and we'll be calling up three people, whether or not you are authorized to speak on behalf of an organization or a business or a group of people. So, in other words, are you a lobbyist, either paid or unpaid? What else? Bathrooms are out in the hall, men's to the south, women's to the north, my left, my right. Signs have to be in front of you. They can go no higher than your chin. That's for security reasons. And we will look at, see how many people have signed up, repeating the same testimony over and over and over again, tends not to be persuasive. So if someone has said, made your point already, you can defer. You have a right to repeat it, don't get me wrong, but you can defer as well your time to testify. With that, we have a quorum, and Horton City Council will come to order. Council Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Stoltzman?
Here.
Leonard? Adams?
Here. And somewhere I have my script. Somewhere. Oh, one other thing before I turn to the city attorney. This is not a hearing about immigration. So the rules of the room are that you speak to the agenda item that's in front of us. And this is a land use issue. It is not about the policy issues related to immigration. If your testimony strays into those kinds of areas or strays outside of the issue at hand, I will ask you to get back on track. Catherine, or first off, Council Clerk, can you please read the council calendar item?
Item 81, appeal of South Portland Neighborhood Association against Design Commission's decision to approve a building addition at 4310 Southwest McAdam Avenue, LU10145100DZM.
So the city attorney will make some announcements at the beginning of this hearing. These announcements are required by state law.
Mayor Adams, before I begin do the opening announcements, there is one request that I think we probably ought to take up in advance. The council members have received a request from the applicant to open the record for the limited purpose of considering information and evidence related to the proposed use issue. And the applicant has indicated a willingness to extend the 120-day deadline, which now runs on February 9th to February 23rd, in order to accommodate that. And the applicant has proposed a schedule, if you agree with their request, to allow the record to allow parties to submit evidence on the use issue from now to 5 o'clock p.m. on January 26th, which is a 7-day period. Everyone would then have an additional 7-day period until 5 p.m. on February 2nd to respond to evidence that was submitted during the first 7-day period. The applicant would have until 5 p.m. on February 7th to submit final argument. The council would then come back in a continued hearing on February 9th or February 16th for the purpose of deliberating and making a tentative decision, and then adopt final findings and a decision on February 23rd. So that's the request that's been placed before you. I think you ought to resolve that request first, because that will affect the nature of the announcements I need to make at the outset of the hearing.
So do we need a motion?
Yes.
So I move a motion to approve the request that was just summarized by the
Second.
City attorney. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on council?
So I have a question, Mayor, if I could, for council.
Yep.
So in the documents that we have before us, and based on what the design commission did, the design commission, as I understand it, did not address. Sir, if you could just move. Well, thanks. The design commission did not address the use issue.
Not specifically. At the outset of the commission's decision, the nature of the use was stated. Kara can clarify, but I believe there was no focused testimony, and they indicated it was not appropriate on the use issue.
So the question I have for you, counsel, is were we to follow this recommended approach and take testimony on use, and were the council, and I'm speaking hypothetically, that the council has not discussed this matter, this is a quasi-judicial proceeding, we're bound by a set of rules, but if the council decides to reject the design commission's recommendation or to otherwise deny and require a conditional use proceeding, if that was the will of the council, what is the effect of taking testimony on use before us on any conditional use proceeding?
Well, I think there are theoretically a variety of options available to the council. Remember, this is a design review proceeding, so it's a review of what the proposed facility looks like. In theory, the council could decide that the design looks fine, but they disagree with the design commission on the characterization of some or all of the use. If that were the case, the council could, in theory, uphold the design commission's decision with a modification indicating they disagree with the design commission on its characterization or all or part of the use, and add a condition stating that the use of all or part of the building could not take place until a conditional use review had been obtained.
And that would then trigger going back to the beginning of that process.
Review. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the motion? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Fritz?
I believe it's appropriate to hear discussion of the use and new evidence on the use. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Motion is approved and will serve as the basis of the rest of the hearing.
All right. I need to begin the hearing with some announcements that are required by state law and city code. And please bear with me, because this is going to be a mixed hearing. Part of it is an on-the-record hearing as to the design issues. It is an evidentiary hearing as to the use issues, and I will try to make that clear in my announcements. So first, as to the design issues, this is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. You can't bring up anything new. This hearing is to decide only if the Design Commission made the correct decision as to the design, applying the design criteria based on the evidence that was presented to the commission. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. As to the use issue, this is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence on the use issue to council in support of your arguments. In terms of the order of presentation in this appeal hearing, we'll begin with a staff report by Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 to 15 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present the appellant's case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. The applicant will then have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the applicant, the Council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal and support the applicant. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. The Council will, well, let me go to the part of the hearing that is an on-the-record hearing.
Can I, unless there are objections, I want to propose that the, instead of 10 minutes, it's 11 minutes.
All right. Okay.
At the request.
I think my announcement said approximately 10 to 15. So
oh, you did? Okay.
It encompasses
so
that.
Be prepared for 11. You get an additional minute.
Okay.
At the request of one of the proposers.
So as to the use issue, it's a, okay. As to the design criteria, this is an on-the-record hearing. And I'd like to announce several guidelines for those of you who will be addressing City Council as to application of the design criteria. For that particular set of issues, the evidentiary record is closed, and it is an on-the-record hearing. This means you have to limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the Design Commission. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the Design Commission. You may not submit new evidence today that wasn't submitted to the Commission. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, the Council will not consider it, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. If you believe someone who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument. Finally, under state law, only issues as to approval of the design criteria, application of the design criteria that were raised before the Design Commission may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the Design Commission, you may object to the Council's consideration of that issue. Turning to the nature of the use issue, today's hearing is an evidentiary hearing for that purpose. Any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to the Council clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to the Council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the Council clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Your testimony, arguments, or evidence on the use issue must be directed to that issue or any other criteria in the City's Comprehensive Plan or Zoning Code that you believe apply to the decision. And the BDS staff will identify the applicable code sections and approval criteria as part of their staff report to the Council. You must raise an issue clearly enough to give the Council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you'll be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Finally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the Council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court to challenge the conditions of approval. So to sum up, to reiterate, the Council will hear testimony today. The hearing will be continued to either February 9th or February 16th, and that will be a decision that will have to be made before the Council concludes this hearing. During the interim, everyone will have an opportunity to submit evidence on the use issue until 5 p.m. on January 26th. You will then have an opportunity to respond to any evidence on the use issue that was submitted during that initial 7-day period, and that deadline will expire at 5 p.m. on February 7th. The applicant will have to until 5 p.m. on February 7th to submit final argument, not evidence, argument, and the Council will then deliberate and make a tentative decision on either February 9th or February 16th to be determined, and we'll come back on February 23rd to adopt a final set of findings and make a final decision in this appeal.
All right. I now ask for those of you that are new to the process, I now ask the Council two questions. The first one is about conflict of interest, both actual and potential conflict of interest. And as defined by state law, a City Council member has a potential or actual conflict of interest if a member's relatives or the member's business or business associate Associates would realize a financial gain or loss resulting from the council's decisions on the matter before us today. Does the City Council have any actual or potential conflict of interest to declare at this time? Hearing none, I then ask the question regarding ex parte contacts, and ex parte contacts are communication between a council member and a party to a quasi-judicial proceeding about the substance of the proceeding that takes place outside of this public hearing. Does any member of City Council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside this hearing to disclose?
I've had a number of emails, presumably from some in attendance here, advocating a position. I've been careful to either just thank them politely as they've written or to publicly acknowledge in the email that I can't take a position, as some of the emails have asked me to do, because this is a quasi-judicial proceeding, and to do so would cause me to recuse myself from the hearing.
I think we've all received those. I sent copies of all of the emails that I received to Carla Morlove, the council clerk, so they are in the record.
And I've received the same emails and had the same response, knowing this is a quasi-judicial proceeding as described by Commissioner Leonard.
I believe one of my staff has spoken with Jim Davis, the land use chair for South Portland.
And I, too, have received emails which I have not reviewed, and I believe that members of my staff have been contacted from time to time by members of the public asking about the process.
Does anyone in this room wish to ask any questions of the ex parte contacts that we just disclosed? All right. Does anyone, so no one on the City Council visited the site? I didn't hear any of that. Do any members of the council have any other matters that need to be discussed before this hearing begins? All right, then let's begin. We will start with the staff report.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Kara Fioravanti. I'm staff with Bureau Development Services. And I'll start my presentation. The site for the proposed development is shown here. It's zone CXD, which is central commercial with design overlay. The approval criteria addressed in the design review were the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines, the South Waterfront Design Guidelines, and 33825040, the criteria for modifications to zoning code development standards. Here we see the site. It sits at the south end of the South Waterfront subdistrict of Central City. This purple line indicates the South Waterfront district boundaries. It's a couple blocks from the river. It's nearby I-5, which you see here, and it fronts McAdam, which is a state highway. Here we see, zooming into the site, it's located right here. It has four very unique frontages: Southwest Bancroft Street, at the intersection of Bancroft and McAdam, is the main portal in and out of the district as it today. To the west of the site is Southwest McAdam, as I mentioned, that's a state highway. To the east, currently, it's the trolley line. It's not a public street yet. It's also the Greenway Trail for the interim until the Greenway Trail is constructed. But in the future, Southwest Moody is expected to be extended down south, and it also is expected to accommodate the streetcar line. So in the future, it will be a transit street. And then finally, to the south is ODOT property. It's not right-of-way. It's expected to be surplus property, and it may be developed in the future if it's sold to private development. A quick project summary. You see the project at the upper right. The project is actually a building addition to an existing building. It's going to be three stories added to four stories. The long-term tenant planned is Department of Homeland Security's Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. The existing building will include office and a processing center. The addition will include some office and structured parking. The project is phased because Southwest Moody will be extended and Bancroft will be realigned, so the site will change over the years. and that will change the design of the project, which we'll see in a couple of slides. The building entry faces Bancroft, the vehicle entry faces Bancroft in phase one, and Bancroft and Moody at phase two. There's secured surface vehicle area facing Bancroft and Moody, and then finally there were five modifications to development standards of the zoning code. A quick building summary, the existing building is about 39,000 square feet of office, and 3370 will be a processing center. The addition is about 26,000 square feet of office, and with parking it's at 71,300. So the total building with parking will be 110,000 square feet. Quick image of the vicinity you see here. This is the building in its current situation with surface parking. This is McAdam. This is Bancroft. The vicinity includes three large old industrial buildings. This building is currently being renovated for the Southwest Charter School. This is a vacant building, and this is a building that's been used for office for a long time. This is the old spaghetti factory. Here shows a street plan just to give you a sense of what the future for the site is going to look like. This is the site. This is Moody extending. This is Bancroft being realigned for one way out of the district. And this would be the new south portal in and out of the district at Hamilton. This is an important slide because it shows the significant change to the site once the streets go in. If you note this red line here and this red line here, that will be the new grade once Moody gets extended. So for phase one, before Moody goes in, the building's basement will be exposed for quite a while, which you see in this location here and this location here. Once the street goes in, this will be the first floor of the building, as shown here, too. I should note, this is the south elevation facing that ODOT property, and this is the east elevation facing Moody. Again, the vicinity, this is the existing building with the addition. And I was just going to note some recent development in the area. This is the Southwest Charter School. This is a building that's been approved and may be under construction soon, a housing project. This is the new park that was recently opened, and obviously you see the new condo buildings filling in the vacant blocks. This shows a picture of the existing building at the corner of Bancroft and McAdam with the new addition attached. As I mentioned, the phase construction, this shows phase one with the rail line and Bancroft. In phase two, what you'll see is Bancroft gets straightened out, this area goes back to the site, and the street goes in. There were five modifications, as I mentioned, all relating to pedestrian-focused standards. The Design Commission felt comfortable approving all five because they had a condition of approval that requires phase two. Phase two is considered to really improve the area and mitigate for the lack of meeting these standards. So to begin, ground floor window standard wasn't met on all four elevations. And I should note the existing building was required to meet these standards as well because this was a significant remodel. Transit Street main entrance was just shy of meeting the standard facing Bancroft. Location of vehicle area is not allowed between a building and a street. With the construction of a new building, this is all new vehicle area between the building and a street. It's obviously, future street, Moody. Required building line, 75% of the building must be within 12 feet of this transit street. Only 49% of the building is within 12 feet of the street. And then finally, ground floor active use. The requirement is that 50% of the building include ground floor active use. Ground floor active use in phase one is limited to this area where the lobby is. In phase two, this parking area would be remodeled into retail facing the street. So there were three hearings with the Design Commission. There was a lot of focus on improving the design, really focusing on the urban edge and being contributory to the district. As you see here, there was a lot of focus at the entry, trying to make this a grand gesture for people entering the site, getting some site amenities with landscape design and materials, and trying to integrate this vehicle area with the people entry and make one cohesive element. So there was a lot of focus there that evolved. And there was also a lot of focus on the street edge that faces Moody. This shows phase one, when there will be just the rail line and the running path. And then this shows phase two with the street in and a little more amenity at the sidewalk level when the grades are raised. That's where the design commission focus was. Obviously, there was an appeal from the South Portland Neighborhood Association, and there were several issues raised at both the hearings and in the appeal statement, and they're listed here. I could run through them real quick. First off, there was an inappropriate use categorization. The neighborhood feels that the processing center is a detention facility and requires a Type 3 CU. They noted the project's lack of compliance with some GSA design requirements. They noted concerns with the traffic impact on the neighborhood streets and the intersection of Bancroft and McAdam. They had concerns about the security fencing and security measures not being compatible with the neighborhood. They were worried that Phase 1 is going to exist for a very long time and Phase 2 is several years away. They noted too many modifications related to creating a pedestrian-friendly urban environment. They noted the facilities next door to K-3 elementary school, even though the GSA requirements have a requirement for being 300 feet away, and then they also brought up parking issues. So there were several issues raised through testimony.
What's GSA?
The General Services Administration with the federal government. So they're the party that released the request for proposal for this project.
Thank you.
So to get to use, I have four more slides. I'm going to go through the use analysis, what BDS went through to figure out what this use is. Obviously, the zoning code does not define this use outright in its definitions. So what we did was look at the definitions and pick the most likely definitions, look at those characteristics, and figure out what use this fits. The three that were analyzed further were office, basic utility, and detention facility. So to begin with office, which Design Commission decision states this use is office. First off, it's allowed outright in the CX zone. The definition, office uses are characterized by activities conducted in an office setting that focus on the provision of goods and services, usually by professionals. Examples include government offices. It was found that the proposal meets this definition. So the primary use was classified as office. The processing center was classified as accessory to the primary use. And this determination of accessory was based on 33920.030. And that section of the code describes what characteristics you consider when figuring out if the activity is accessory or primary. So the relevant characteristics for that determination included, first, the relative amount of site or floor area and equipment devoted to the activity. The processing area is a small portion of the overall total project. Second, the relative number of employees in each activity. The building can house up to 150 employees in the building. The processing area will have a minimum of one employee at all times. Of course, it could have more if there's a lot of activity going on in the processing center. Also considering hours of operation, the entire building has a typical hours of operation of traditional office hours. Taking into account the building and site arrangement, the vehicles used with the activity, there's 101 parking stalls for typical vehicles in the structured parking, but there is accommodation for large buses, which, according to the applicant, will rarely be used. And then finally, whether the activity would be likely to be found independent of other activities on the site, and it's understood that the processing area wouldn't exist without the rest of the building.
So I'll extend your time, and I will.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Two more slides. Going on a basic utility, it's also allowed outright in the CX zone. The definition, basic utilities are infrastructure services which need to be located in or near the area where the service is provided. Basic utility uses generally do not have regular employees at the site. Services may be public or privately provided, and all public safety facilities are basic utilities. So considering this definition in each part of the definition, it was found that the use doesn't fit it perfectly. And that's because, first, the facility doesn't need to be located specifically in South Waterfront. It could be located anywhere within the metropolitan region. There are regular employees at the site. It is not a public safety facility because of the definition in our zoning code. Public safety facilities are defined as being owned, leased, or operated by the City of Portland, and that's not true in this case. And then finally, a note about accessory uses that are listed in the zoning code for basic utilities. It does include holding cells, but holding cells within a police station. And obviously, this isn't a police station. So for these reasons, basic utility was found not to be met. With regard to detention facility, that does require type 3 conditional use in the CX zone. The definition is very brief. Detention facilities include facilities for the judicially required detention or incarceration of people. Inmates and detainees are under 24-hour supervision by peace officers, except when on an approved leave. And taking into account the characteristics of this definition, the processing center doesn't meet this definition because it's the note is that it's judicially required. With regard to testimony submitted by the applicant, exhibits A3 and A4, the facility is not for the judicially required detention or incarceration of people. It is administrative and civil in nature, and those exhibits go on further detail with definitions as to why it's not judicially required.
Kara, before you go to the next, could you back up one page from the one you were just at?
Basic utility?
Yes.
Yeah.
So an accessory use listed in the zoning code includes holding cells within a police station. So if this were for an example, what I'm thinking of is Southeast Precinct, okay, which I believe is on Southeast 106, that is across the street from the East Portland Community Center and a grade school. I don't remember the name of the grade school. That's the David Douglas School District, I believe. Mm-hmm. So they have holding cells there. Is that considered a detention facility, or is it considered to be an accessory under the zoning code as this definition applies?
My guess is that that was determined to be a basic utility because it's a City of Portland facility. It's a public safety facility, and it's a police station with holding cells. I think what you just described meets this use. If that's true, this use is allowed outright in that zone.
But if it was considered to be that Southeast Precinct a detention facility?
If it was, okay.
If it was, would it not be allowed to be there because it was a detention facility because there was a grade school across the street and a community center across the street?
No, the requirement for these types of facilities to be far from schools is a federal is from the GSA requirements, so it's from the federal document submitted by the appellant.
So we don't have anything inherently that would...
We at the city, no.
Okay.
No, we don't.
Mayor, I have a couple questions if I could.
Did you get through your slides?
I got through everything. I didn't summarize what your options are today, but I could...
If you could do that, then I'll recognize Commissioner Fish.
Okay, thanks. So there's a few options, and it's possible that where you land is a combination of a couple of these. First off, you could support the Design Commission's decision of approval for the building design and the use classification of the processing area as accessory to the primary use of office. You could also support the appeal by classifying the proposed processing center as a detention facility, which would require a Type 3 conditional use. You could stray a little bit from that and acknowledge the proposed processing center is not office, but determine that the proposed use is something else. For example, basic utility, you may find that it's something other than listed by me, and that other use may be allowed outright. Basic utility would be. And then finally, you could deny the Design Commission's decision of approval because you found that the building design doesn't meet the design guidelines and the modification approval criteria.
Commissioner Fish.
Well, first, thank you for an excellent PowerPoint because this is complicated stuff, and I think you've really laid it out nicely. And, Kara, I don't know where I'm going to come out on this, but there's a few questions I have just to set the table for our discussion.
Sure.
The first is... I was struck in the memo that we were furnished that the BDS determined that the proposed use didn't fit squarely into any of the three options. Correct?
It's true.
So what's the rule of construction that you use when it doesn't fit clearly into any particular category? What are some of the tools you use under those circumstances?
You know, it really was the analysis that I went through looking at. I don't have the section of the code, I'm sorry, but there is a
generally, yeah.
Yeah, there is a point in the code where it talks about what use category does it most comply with, acknowledging that the use categories aren't going to capture everything. So let's look at what is it most like. And then I think there was a weighing of, within each definition, what are the primary characteristics of that definition? And if it meets at least those primary ones, it's more likely to be that use than, for instance, if there was a lesser important characteristic that the use doesn't meet or the activity doesn't meet.
Right.
And kind of weighing each definition. So I think you could find, when you look at each definition, the activity doesn't meet some of the characteristics of all of them. But the primary characteristics, what does that activity meet most of those, if not all?
Yeah.
Does that
well, I think
make sense?
I think you very clearly stated sort of the art of the process and not the science, because the science would be easy if there was a code provision that said,
definitely,
a detention facility built by Homeland Security with or without offices is treated as such. So,
mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that. Reasonable people looking at this are going to come out differently. What we're trying to do is understand what the spirit of the code is and how that guides us. So just a couple of other questions. In your analysis, did you consider whether there's more than one primary use? In other words, did you consider the option, instead of looking at primary and accessory, of simply potentially more than one primary use?
Yes, we did.
And how did you arrive at the conclusion that you reached on that?
These were all tough decisions. That was a tough decision too. I think going back to these characteristics, the processing center felt subordinate when looking at all of the activities going on the site and the site design.
And is that in part because of the square footage?
Square footage and activities going on in the site. But the activities going on the site were based on only what we had in the record. Figuring out if it was accessory or primary was based on these bullet points, and we landed on it being subordinate.
And one other question on the definition of a detention facility, because this one I think is going to be something we're all going to focus a lot on, because in the RFP that the GSA put out, they asked the people to do proposals on a detention facility, and our statute, our code, talks about a detention facility, and lawyers have made arguments about whether our detention facility provision is meant to focus on sort of WAPATO or whether it's something else, in a sense, whether it's a jail or prison or something else. And you mentioned that where you came down had to do with the definition under 33.920.520, detention facilities, where it says detention facilities includes and then describes facilities for the judicially required detention, blah, blah, blah. And I know that that's an argument that has been made by lawyers in this. And
mm-hmm.
I just want to say one thing that struck me about that is that the example section, sub C, describes as examples prisons, jails, probation centers. Now, what do you understand a probation center to be?
Well, just going off of that, we struggled a little bit with the examples because none of those examples are defined, which wasn't helpful in our code. Probation center, my personal understanding of a probation center is a place where people who were previously incarcerated go and visit and check in and give their status and have meetings or
Right. So I haven't checked Webster's dictionary on this, right. But I appreciate that we're all struggling with what's the meaning of these words, because we don't have guides. And what struck me is that a probation center seems different than a judicially required detention or incarceration facility. That is, a place where you're required to be locked up versus a place that you're required perhaps to visit a probation officer, and it could be in an office setting or other things. And I raise this point because the code doesn't give us a lot of guidance as I've read it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've made a good faith effort to sort of look at all three provisions and get to your best recommendation. But what I will be asking counsel later and seeking some guidance on is particularly under detention facilities, what does the word includes mean? Is it meant to be a point of limitation, or is it just an illustration? And under examples, when we say probation centers, does that in effect, through the example section, show that subsection A, the characteristics, is to be read very broadly, because in fact probation centers are usually not jails or prisons. So
right.
Part of the
right.
struggle that we have to go through. But I appreciate the work that you've done laying the framework for us. Mm-hmm. And again, I think reasonable people can disagree on this, particularly because the language is open to interpretation. So thank you.
Well, I would just point out to that last point that just having looked at this no more than Commissioner Fish, that there is a theme with the examples, and each of the themes includes, with the possible exception of a juvenile detention home, I'm not sure if juveniles under the age of 18 are literally convicted of something or not. I don't recall if they're in a juvenile detention home, but the theme is that each of those include facilities that a person that had been adjudicated in the judicial process had been convicted of something, or they wouldn't be in a jail or a prison or at a probation center.
Right.
So the distinction, without taking sides here, between I think where you came down and what these examples are, is a holding facility doesn't imply, at least yet in this country, that
at
you're convicted
yet.
Of anything,
right.
But are awaiting adjudication.
Right.
So that's the distinction I see with these examples.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my final question, Kara, is your analysis under the office section. Because one thing that struck me about the written record is that there's no dispute that under sub A characteristics, a government office qualifies as an office. But the analysis that you took us to was the statutory provision 33920030, classification of uses, where you go through you answer a series of questions and see how it applies. But it seems to me we've bypassed an important clue here, which is the accessory uses definition of the statute. And the accessory uses definition describes things like cafeterias and health facilities and other things. So again, attention.
Right.
Because a detention center or holding cells doesn't seem to be contemplated, because I don't think anyone was thinking about it, under accessory uses. So you've gone off of that provision to the more general category of an analysis of what's a primary and secondary use.
Right. And on that point, I think we struggled a little bit because the accessory uses listed, examples listed, ends with primarily used by the employees of the building, which those examples obviously are for the employees of the building. This was a little bit outside of that. So agree.
Again, I very much appreciate the good faith effort you've made to go through this code. It's ambiguous. We don't have a lot of guidance, and we're trying to come to the right conclusion, but you've given us the options, and I appreciate your work.
Thanks.
Commissioner Linder, did you have more questions? Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you. Just one question on the design. Is there any barbed wire fencing involved?
No.
And this, it's very small, you probably can't see it, but this is a portrayal of the security fence, the 8-foot-tall security fence, which looks a little like on an overpass. Which street does that front on?
So that fence is most prevalent in Phase 1 facing Moody, when it's just the trolley line and the running path that you see here. That in Phase 2, It's not a great image because the trees are in the way. But that in phase two gets enhanced with some intermittent brick walls. So you see a brick wall here, and then about here it breaks with some see-through iron fencing. And then again, it just kind of, along the street, has a series of experiences with walls, benches, some fencing. So that fencing is prevalent in phase one.
Thank you.
And you also see a little bit at the gate entry. This is slightly different fencing, but it's fencing within swinging gates for the cars.
It's not a prison yard with barbed wire on the top.
No, definitely not.
So my question, and I think I know the answer to, but to air it out, I'm used to these kinds of federal facility decisions are usually outside of local influence. The federal courthouse a block or so away does not have to comport with our local laws. Mm-hmm. Why is this different?
Because the tenant is only leasing the site, they are subjecting themselves to local regulations. If the federal government owned the site, they could avoid our local regulations and process.
All right. We will now hear from both the appellant, supporters of the appeal, followed by the principal opponent and opponents of the appeal. So if I could have the appellant come forward. Welcome back to City Council Chambers. You just need to give us your first and last name, no address. We don't want your address. And if you are representing or lobbying for anybody.
My name is James Davis. I'm Vice President and Land Use Chairman for the South Portland Neighborhood Association. LU 10-145-100, or 4310 Southwest McAdam, is probably the simplest appeal that I've had to work on in my 10 years of land use for the South Portland Neighborhood Association. Our appeal is supported by black letter code in at least three places in Title 33. And all we are asking is that the city meet the code requirements, and that this project be subject to conditional use. There's been quite a question as to what this building is. You've used the last 10 or 15 minutes. This is a document, solicitation of offers from GSA, and it's my conceit that the leasee would know what it is that they want to do in that building. And according to page 6, they define it as a detention removal facility with supporting administrative offices. Supporting. Now, that's important in that they are saying this is a detention removal facility. They're not saying it's an office. They're only saying that the office is supportive. As a detention facility, the code is quite clear that this requires conditional use. And the idea that our ideas of detention facility may be different than the feds, I think is a little bit thin. Also, because this is a major remodeling and renovation, the code also requires this to go through conditional use. And this is also a change of use. Right now, that facility, the existing facility, is something called the vault. So if you don't want people to know that you have valuables, you can go there and rent a box and put them in there. It's open to the public. It's a retail facility. That, compared to a detention facility, is clearly a change of use. A couple things you might consider as an adjunct to what I'm saying is, in our neighborhood, we have the Cedarwood School, which is a very, very nice school, well attended. It's housed in the neighborhood house. The neighborhood house was built around the turn of the century, primarily by first wave Jewish, German Jewish immigrants to help Eastern Jewish immigrants learn the ways of this country. It was essentially was a school with social activities on the side. Didn't make any difference. The school still had to go through conditional use. Naturopathic College, which is booming, is in the Failing School, which is a terrible name for a school. but it's been a school since, again, turn of the century. They had to go through conditional use. Essentially, it's quite clear that all we are asking is what the code states. Now, South Waterfront, in my mind, is probably the most fragile of our neighborhoods. It has been beat up terribly by the housing bubble burst, and I'm sure you've all seen the ads for the auctions that went on down there, which has cost a lot of the property owners anywhere from 20 to 30 to 40%. So that what I'm saying with conditional use, those things that this facility will bring to the neighborhood can be addressed in a meaningful manner so as to ameliorate any of the concerns that the neighbors and the neighborhood association may have. A good case in point is that during the hearing for design, there was no platform for PDOT to make any recommendations in terms of traffic, so that the question of traffic could never be addressed. There's a whole lot of questions that can never be addressed by just putting this thing through design review. So I think I'm saying is, with conditional use, the neighbors get an opportunity to have their legitimate concerns addressed. City bureaus certainly will have an opportunity to have their more technical concerns addressed. And I think, and this is purely personal, the first thing I read in the newspaper every day are the letters to the editor, because I find that people usually have so much better ideas than the professional philosophers that are writing on the editorial page. And I think that in a very real and true sense, the developer may hear things that they've never thought of before, never occurred to them, so that the developer could actually benefit by conditional use as well. So that's all I'm going to say right now. It's going to be a long meeting. I'm glad to answer any questions I can, but we've got a lot of people here.
Any questions from council?
So, yeah, what officially is the South Portland Neighborhood Association's position?
The official position is that we would like this to go through conditional use, which originally staff determined that this project was to go through conditional use. I have a copy of a kind of a odd letter from the architect that Kara did show in this PowerPoint that wiggles all over trying to avoid conditional use, but that's neither here nor there right now.
Okay. Good. Thank you, sir.
Thank
you. Appreciate your testimony. We will now hear from supporters of the appeal. How many are signed up?
We have 17.
17. We have found what you can say in 3 minutes can be said even better in one. So we would ask that you try to, we'll give you the full 3 minutes if you want it, but we'd ask that you try to limit it to 1 minute so we can hear more people while we're still kind of fresh. So Carla will be calling three. You'll come up three at a time, sit in the chair, the clock in front of you will count down your, will count down to 1 minute, but we will let you go 2 minutes beyond that. And then she will also announce the three after that so that if you're up in the balcony, you have time to make your way down to the first floor. Carla.
The first three, please come on up, are Bob Friedhoff, Irene Tinker, and Jim Luke. They will be followed by Thomas Noguchi, Krista Rodriguez, and Lenore Barker, or Barkin, I believe is the last name.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. Again, you just need to give us your first and last name, no addresses, and the clock in front of you will be set for 1 minute, but I will let you go long, or just tell me if you need longer before you speak.
It's Bob Friedhoff, and I'm a resident of the South Waterfront area. And I'd just like to make the point that I think you people ought to try to protect your investment, because you have $125 million invested in that South Waterfront area. And I've got my life savings invested in Omaha, so to say. And I would like, I can see no other way than this is would diminish the value of your investment. So all I do is urge you to save your investment. Thank you.
And just for the record, we actually cannot make decisions based on that. We're governed in how we can make a decision about this issue by state law. But
okay.
Appreciate your encouragement. Ma'am.
Yeah,
love your brevity, by the way. An example to us all. Ma'am.
Irene Tinker, I'm a new resident in the Mirabella. We moved into the South Waterfront because it is a, we hope, a new Pearl District. And we are surprised at the policies that would not support primarily residential use. We're also excited about the fact that there are increasing numbers of children in the area. And we really do need both the use of a K through 8, which was supposed to be in the area, and we certainly could use more facilities for children in the area. Now, you've put money into the park, and you've done a lot of good planning, and I'm really quite surprised that you would undercut all of that by having what is essentially something for for an industrial use. What is now you're trying to make into a premier residential area. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi.
My name is Jim Luke. I also live down on the waterfront. In the past, it has been my responsibility to supervise staff at various levels. Occasionally, I've had to revisit decisions made and directions followed by those staff members, and I kind of feel that this might be where you are today. I feel that the staff has defined this project as an addition to an existing office building, and the proposed use of this new building will be described as described by them, an office with accessory uses. And then they go on to describe those accessory uses as a lobby, a loading area, processing center, general office layout, et cetera. Then we go back to the architect memo of May 11th of this past year, 2010, and they described the facility as a high-security jail or detention center with accessory office use. So they said the office use was accessory based on what they had seen, whereas the staff, your staff members, have described that as office with accessory uses. And then when we look at the title, Title 33-925-20, we talked about, I think Commissioner Fish talked about that a little bit, and they described detention facilities and item B under